My name's Ed Piskor.
I'm Jim Rugg.
Little bit of business before we get into talking about this giant phone book of comics. Jim, what you got going on?
Octobriana, 1976. My latest comics project, a blacklight comic printed with fluorescent ink, is now available wherever comics are sold. If you're interested in weird comics, unique printed matter, things that don't look like any other comics in your collection, you're going to want to add Octobriana 1976 to that collection. And if you're curious about how you make a blacklight comic, you can find out in my process zine that you can get from jimrugg.com. Pick up Octobriana 1976 wherever comics are sold, preferably at your local comic shop. Give them some love, but you can get this online. You can get it again wherever comics are sold.
Jim, I ask you, are you going to be reprinting this blacklight comic?
No, I am not. So, good point, Ed. This is selling well. If you want one of these, I would recommend get it sooner rather than later.
I'm going to sell my $500 in a couple months. Patreon.com/Ed Piskor. Serializing my Red Room comic strips. At least 2 pages per week, every Tuesday. New strips come out. $3 gets you the archive, and they're printed up in a high enough resolution that kayfabers are printing up paper editions so that they don't have to, stare into the sun of the computer screen while they read their comics. And getting close to the first complete story is going to be up there. This is for the early adopters because we are going to be printing these on paper. They're going to be available through the direct market and such. More news on that to follow. But one other piece of business that's sort of unique is that right now until September 15th you can bid for Hip Hop Family Tree original artwork available through Sotheby's Auction House in New York City. The end date is September 15th, but right now online bidding is commencing, and there are links in the description below. You could see what the lots are. And you could, place a bid. Maybe get your hands on some covers or something from the comic. The business at hand, Jim, is Essential X-Men number 2. And you look at me quizzically. Why are we talking about this comic? And to me, this is one of the great Marvel essentials to have. First off, man, were you a buyer of the essentials when they were coming out?
Yes, I have quite a few.
And it was amazing.
It really was. We should give that context because, man, when they started, I bought all of them.
Right.
Because it would be like Jack Kirby, 30 issues of Fantastic Four in order, the Jack Kirby stuff that I'd never be able to afford. It was all these like significant runs like the Essential X-Men because I was not being able to buy the new X-Men comics, certainly not all of them. So this was amazing whenever this format came out.
$13. They were trying to, like, manga was in the air, and they wanted to try to do as close to that kind of thing as possible.
It's one of the great formats. Like, we often, bang the drum of how great the artist edition format is. These essentials, I would argue, were similar, where it was like, yes, this was a way to be able to read a bunch of these classic comics, an affordable way to read them, get a big chunk, get your money's worth. Pretty interesting. Whoever got behind this, very smart move.
Here's what's dope about this one, man. We're going to be just scrolling through 500 pages of John Byrne, Terry Austin artwork in pretty crisp black and white. These are printed from photostats. And there are times where you're going to see indicia copy notes to the colorist and like that. But relentless. Look at the level of craft. Look at the work they're putting into this stuff. They never took a month off.
That's incredible. 500 pages. Because, that's your A-list team. When you think of X-Men and what built X-Men, it really is the John Byrne, Claremont run.
Right. Byrne started in like issue 108 or something. This volume starts at issue 120, but goes up to issue 144. So they're out of the picture 143, but this is like, introduction of Alpha Flight. This is the entire Dark Phoenix saga. with the Hellfire Club and all of that.
Probably the high point in a lot of ways. Days of Future Past.
That's in here.
That's about it, man. Dark Phoenix and Days of Future Past. Wow.
Introduction of Kitty Pryde is in here. But this is the one where it's just like, you throw up your hands. And, you know, like, we were talking about on the Dave Lapham episode about Stray Bullets. Look at that.
Yes.
How I was curious about Dave Lapham as a person, because it's like, clearly there's some graphomania there. But with the graphomaniac, usually you have pretty antisocial personality, but Lapham was like so good at capturing character. I think this speaks a little bit to probably like Byrne's reputation, being able to turn in, you know, like reliable artwork like this, month in, month out. And even, you know, Terry Austin definitely doing huge, a lot of the work on this. But when Byrne leaves this, he's going to leave X-Men to do like 3 monthly books.
Right.
So he's very comfortable, let's say, being his own company.
Yeah, and we should say this is where he becomes a superstar.
Totally.
You know, I you can find older Byrne work and it looks good and stuff, but this is the thing that made John Byrne John Byrne.
This is like the first issue of classic X-Men that I got off the stands, man. The one that has this story in here, man.
Whenever you mention Terry Austin, who definitely deserves some of the credit for the smoothness,
credit,
the polish, the finish, things like these details that really make this A-level work, come to mind Jim Lee, Scott Williams, you know, a decade later.
Yeah, one of the great artist-writer tandems. And I always talk about, like, there are very few great collaborations in mainstream comics. And I do cite the Claremont, Byrne, Austin, Orzechowski, and Glennis Wine, or Oliver, depending on when she got married or
right,
not.
Right.
I think that they're one of the great collaborations in comics. But it's a different kind of thing. It's not like a Miller Jansen kind of comic that they're making. This is pulp material that can be described. It can be described as pulp in like sort of the best sense of the word, you know?
It is worlds apart from what Miller was doing, you know, as a genre too. But it has that energy. You know, when you describe it as those guys having this, you know, great collaborative success, that synergy is on display. Like, it feels like these pages are crackling.
Yeah, a lot of ideas. They're definitely getting a lot of story in to each issue. And there will be issues where you almost like scratch your head, like, what? And they just launch you into something completely new, get in, get out, onto the next thing.
Yeah, and I wonder about, you know, like, you get these artists at the right time when they're young and hungry and really have that energy and style. I think Claremont talked a little bit about that when we spoke to him. You know, like, he's worked with so many different artists. You write for 15 years, you're going to get a bunch of fresh new artists coming through. And I think that's something that he kind of recognized as almost an infusion of energy and some new ideas. You know, who does this artist like to draw, or what are they good at drawing? You know, maybe we work in that direction. And I think that's what you're seeing here, is this artist-writer team that they're clicking. They're probably getting tremendous feedback from, like, fans and things, where they're feeding off of that, too, of like, yeah, let's do more Jean Grey. Let's do more Wolverine. You know, that has an impact. Like, if you're seeing articles in the press about you, if you're winning awards, if you're selling your books in bigger and bigger numbers, all of those things have an impact. And I think you see it. You know, I think these guys are trying to top themselves. Seeing this volume is really interesting, considering where comics are today. Like, nobody's going to do 25 issues,
right?
You know, and especially not of this caliber. Like, whenever an A-list art writing team show up on a book, they're doing an arc. You know, they're doing a trade paperback's worth. It's very rare that you would get something like this today, if at all. Like, I'm not sure there's any examples of this anymore.
And Jim, man, I can't be stressed enough. These guys, they took no breaks. They took no breaks in between, man.
The density of the pages almost hurts my eyes.
Right.
You know, it's a far cry. It's a manga format with 500 newsprint pages. But the density of the pages, man, you are not reading these spreads in a second and a half.
This is one of those incredible foreshadowing pieces, because that's Jason Wingard, and the reflect, like the shadow,
that's really awesome.
Is you know, it's not quite the same, and it'll turn out to be Mastermind, you know. But so they sold it like way early. I don't think we saw it anywhere earlier where he is that guy. And that'll pay off much later.
I love this kind of stuff, too, where you see, like, a visual effect being done in the line work.
Right.
You know, you see this character's being hit with this energy burst, and so it's expressed in the line. It's not all rendered out like the other figures are.
On the hunt for young Kitty Pryde.
Some screen tones here, man. We have the gradation screen tone, but also that organic dot screen tone.
For sure. One of my favorite screen tones that Austin would use on Cyclops would be just these parallel lines. But once again, Essential X-Men Volume 2, it has a complete Dark Phoenix saga. Look at that, dude.
That's the iconic. I think this might have been my first classic X-Men issue. Either this one or the following issue. But like, that was always, man, I loved Wolverine, and that was the Wolverine, like the money shot. I bet they printed that thing in so many places, magazines, promos.
It's on the damn video games, like in digitized 8-bit. Format, you know.
Yeah, I think this was it. I think this was my first one, and it was just perfect if you're a Wolverine fan.
It's making mincemeat of those little jobbers.
I would be in awe when I would start to try to figure out how to draw comics, and I would see like all the backgrounds and stuff. It would just kill me. Like, how are you doing this? You know, libraries and studies and different rooms, like the trim of the room. Really hard to wrap my head around.
Molding and stuff. And one of the things that Byrne would do.
This was a cool effect, too. And I think this. I would see criticism of this, and I think it was like a deadline criticism of like, oh, no backgrounds, white backgrounds, but it was perfect, man. Like for an astral plane kind of weird, surreal space, that was a good effect.
Yeah, and whoever would complain about that after seeing page after page of this stuff, go to hell,
you know,
man.
You know those people, though, right?
Like totally.
It's always going to be whatever I can find, and there weren't a lot of weaknesses in this stuff.
Right. So this is wrapping up, man, the Dark Phoenix stuff. Then comes frickin', essentially X-Men Grand Design in 17 pages. It's one of my favorite comics. This one right here, you know, directly after Dark Phoenix Elegy, but it's Byrne and Chris Claremont going through issue 1 to, you know, modern day. Up to this point.
Go back to the cover of this one. That's that New Mutants 98 homage.
Right.
98 or 99, one of them, whenever Sunspot's walking away.
Yep. And here they're sowing the seeds. Like, this is in, this is verbatim, the dialogue from X-Men 1. And I love it because of, you know, like, Iceman as a homosexual character. And look, a redhead's coming. All of a sudden, blah, blah, blah. And then Iceman is leaving. He's a girl, big deal. It's in issue 1, man. But I just to see Byrne draw like all the villains and shit from the history of X-Men. This is worth the price of admission alone, man. See him draw the Mimic. Super dope. And then you know, so it's Dark Phoenix Saga. Then this Elegy thing, and then it goes right into, a couple issues, and then Days of Future Past. But then it caps off with Brent Anderson doing the Despair Man-Thing issue. It's the first time I ever saw Man-Thing issue of X-Men.
And maybe auditioning for God Loves, Man Kills.
Yes. Anyhow, man, my favorite... Marvel Essential, unbelievable to me in context, like thinking about,
wow,
you know, this
to just randomly flip a page.
And I mean, it could, you could just do that. You could just do that. And you come to either an iconic sequence or, you know, money shots, money shot after money shot, these guys firing on all cylinders, an essential volume worth having in the collection.
Some of these essentials are expensive books to track down too.
Usually the later ones, like, you know, the very first essential was Spider-Man. Second, X-Men. Like, I remember, because I was buying all of those until it's like, I miss Marvel Essential. I don't think I need that one. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, the Spider-Men are great, too, because of the Ditko stuff. Absolutely. And I mean, I guess they're great after that, too. You know, Romita rolls in and Gil Kane and stuff, so they continue being great. But
yeah.
That was one of those I remember picking up and being so in love with it because I didn't have a bunch of Ditko Spider-Mans. You know, I might have a couple of Marvel Tale, you know, reprint here or there that I would come across, but to be able to get a chunk of this stuff, you know, there's a lot of classics that this is, I bet this is how a lot of people got to read a lot of this classic material that we had heard about. You'd get an issue here or there, somehow maybe get lucky with one, but to be able to read them, you know, issue to issue like this.
These babies,
very rare at the time,
were very faithfully reproduced from photostats. There's another one that people like to get their hands on that is kind of expensive now, and it's the Conan one, Barry Windsor Smith artwork, but the printing is ass. It's pixelated. Some of it's grayscale because they got some kind of weird file.
I always
file.
Hate the grayscale stuff.
And that's how the later X-Men ones, volume 9 through 11, are the ones that are hard to find, more rare, just fewer of them out there. They started to phase this out because it was too good idea and they wanted to, you know, chip away and sell tinier books in with bigger price tags.
DC follows suit. Shortly after Marvel introduces this format, DC starts reprinting stuff. One of their great ones is the Doom Patrol with that beautiful Bruno Premiani art where, like, the black and white, you know, some of this work looks just as good in black and white as it does in color, too. Like, right. Not all art is suitable for this treatment, but a lot of the stuff, maybe the 60s, 70s, when those guys were drawing in black and white, it really looks great in this format. And Savage Dragon has formats like this. The Savage Dragon Archives, where Larson's work is reproduced, you know, 25, 30 issues at a clip. Some of those are expensive, too. So,
yeah,
it's a fun format.
Also, Sergeant Rock, Hawkman by Joe Kubert. I don't think they did a Sergeant Rock, but if they did, I would definitely.
This feels like the war comics would fit really well, especially with those, like, the short stories, you know, the anthologies. Maybe the House of Mystery kind of stuff, too. The horror stuff would probably be good. The EC comics would be nice in this format, whoever's out there listening.
they want to chip away, man. They want to make $1 million off of everybody, you know? Anyhow, man, scoop this up. I think these are in good enough quantity that you could get them for a cheap price. But man, you got to have it on your bookshelf. If you're into superhero comics, if you want to see a mainstream creative team at the height of their game, color does make the whole experience go. But like, if you want to see that pristine artwork, right now, there's no better way. So that's it, kayfabers. Like, follow, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Hit the bell. We'll notify you when the next videos are available, and we are on that race to 30,000 subs, man. So make that happen. Octobriana's in shops right now. Patreon.com/EdPiskor is where you can see the latest Red Room pages. Every Tuesday, the Sotheby's auction for Hip Hop Family Tree artwork is live right now. You could bid right now online, and the little guy with the hammer is going to swing that thing and announce the final prices on September 15th.
Subscribe to the Cartoonist Kayfabe e-newsletter at the link below this video to keep up with all of this stuff that we're doing. Pick up Cartoonist Kayfabe merch and t-shirts at the links below this video.
Jimmy, it's time to get back to business, man. We have comics to make. Today was a YouTube day, but we're cartoonists by day. Give them the marching orders.
Read more comics.